so strange when it's changing, yes indeed. Yeah, I've seen the hard times and the pressure's been on me. Well, I keep on working like a
sports eye candy last Saturday night in Los Angeles, and nothing better than seeing the UCLA-USC game when both teams are color on color like it was back in the day, and they've been doing it again for the last several years, and it is a beautiful sight to see, that is for sure. Joining us now, talk a little bit about that and other things in the Pac-12 and around college football, Big Anthony Heron. Big Ant, welcome in. How are you, man?
Big diggity dog. As I was just saying to Tony Mack when I got punched up on the line here, I'm hungry. I'm waiting for the opportunity for Thursday evening to strike. We'll obviously have the NFL game later that evening, but you know what Turkey Day is all about. I'm just getting my mind right for that before I get to this weekend with the Bayou Classic down in New Orleans.
Oh, man, that is always so cool, man. I love the Bayou Classic. And, yeah, is that this weekend? I thought it was next weekend.
It is this weekend, yeah, because there are some seasons where they try to time it up with conference championship weekend,
right,
and then there's other years where they time it up with the same weekend as kind of rivalry weekend to close out the regular season. And this year, with the SWAC championship game being the following weekend, December 2nd, down in Houston, they're timing it up with rivalry weekend. And then the following week, whoever wins, and actually for the SWAC West Division, this is basically the West Division championship game between Grambling and Southern on Saturday afternoon at 4 Central on NBC Sports Network. So whoever wins this game is going to go on to face Alcorn State the following weekend down in Houston.
So you're going to miss, like, the war in the desert or whatever. I mean, you're sending Roxy out there to Arizona State game by himself, man. What's up with that?
Yeah, the Territorial Cup. Roxy's going to be on that one without me, but he will have Yogi Roth out there with him. And Lewis Johnson, who is the sideline reporter with our crew during the Pac-12 Network, he's been with NBC far longer than I have, and Lewis has done more Bayou Classics than me. So
right,
he wouldn't miss this game for the world either. So Lewis is going to be with me in New Orleans, and then you'll have Roxy Bernstein with Yogi Roth and Jill Savage on the Pac-12 Network with the Territorial Cup between Arizona and Arizona State.
USC, UCLA ends up being Jim Mora's last game as coach at UCLA. We'll get to the coaching deal in a minute, but you know, I have been saying this all year long that I just really like Josh Rosen. I mean, I really like him a lot. I like him, you know, I'm saying, you know, between him and Darnold, I know Darnold gets all of the pub as being the number one guy, if he's even going to come out. But I like Rosen's game. He's got a kind of swag about him that I really like. His technique is unbelievable, the way he spins the ball. I wonder what he could do with that USC talent. Having said that, though, we just had Tom Luganville on a little while ago, and Lugie, you know, he kind of knows these guys a little bit, too, going all the way back to their high school days. And he questions Rosen's burn to play compared to Darnold's. You know, what's your take on that? I mean, does Rosen love this game enough to – you know, to be a first-rate guy in the NFL?
I believe he does, but I hear what Lugie said, and part of it, and you know, different scouts I've talked to over the last 2 years, just in anticipation of this season, and this is, you know, we've seen Josh Rosen sort of predicted as this first-round NFL draft pick and potential number one overall pick for years now, kind of similar to Christian Hackenberg a few years ago, except Rosen has actually more fully realized his potential in his third year at the collegiate level, now that he stayed healthy and we see the amazing numbers he put up. But a lot of times when you're predicting these quarterbacks years in advance when they're coming out of high school to do these huge things, it doesn't always come through this way. And while Sam Darnold, he was a U.S. Army Bowl participant, so he was an All-American quarterback in high school, but he didn't have the type of pedigree that Josh Rosen did coming out. But between the two of them, you know, tangibly, that's the somewhat more obvious comparison, and we can definitely talk through some of that in detail as we have before. But intangibly, that's going to be the rub for a lot of these NFL teams, because stylistically, as players, they're very different. But also just socially and mentally, emotionally, they're different guys as well. And the makeup of Josh Rosen is one that I wouldn't go as far as to say he doesn't love football. What I would say is that he certainly has a wide array of other interests, and not just interests that he would use as a leisure activity, because you'll see football players who, when they're not in the meeting room or when it's the off season, you know, maybe they'll go and take up some other hobby to pass some time. And I do have other things I enjoy aside from football. Josh Rosen's a guy who's deeply, deeply interested in things aside from football. That partly goes to the comments he made during the preseason, just academically,
right,
wanting to finished multiple majors and wanting to be a guy who could potentially, quote unquote, change the world, as he likes to talk about. And so the level of commitment and dedication you have to truly be a great pro, when you really view other things as equally important as football and you're willing to say that out loud, then it does worry teams whether or not you're going to be able to get into the minutiae of really becoming great, as great as you can at the quarterback position.
You know, a lot of people said that if Jake Locker had come out of Washington after his junior year, he'd have been a first pick in the draft or a top two or three pick in the draft. He waited. He went back for his senior year, and he ended up falling a little bit to around number 10 or so to the Titans. Now, Darnold is only a sophomore, but he could come out. He's a redshirt sophomore. He could come out this year. I don't think he should, to be honest with you. I think he needs some more polish. What's your take on it? And if you're already going to be the number one pick, should he jerk around and play another free season of college football? I know he loves the sun, he loves L.A. and all that kind of stuff. And you know, the teams that have that first, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe if he knew the 49ers were going to take him or something like that, I don't know. But what do you think about Darnold, whether or not he comes out and whether he is ready to come out?
Yeah, that's certainly a big part of the decision he's going to have to make. I mean, I do think another season of college football would benefit Sam Darnold just from a sheer playing standpoint, just tangibly in getting repetitions at the quarterback position in what still, in a lot of ways, is a pro-style offense for USC. You do see Sam Darnold in the center. You do see a route tree that mirrors what's happening in the National Football League. But there's habits that he's developed, habits he's had since high school. I mean, I can pull up and I can post on my Twitter account later just my evaluation, my write-up going into the Army Bowl when Sam Darnold came out of high school and played in that game. And it's a lot of the same types of habits we see right now, with just knowing he's bigger, stronger, faster than a lot of people he's facing. So he runs around and extends plays and guns the ball down the field. And there's a bit of a swashbuckling sort of way that he plays the position. That's really cool. And a lot of it is very fun to watch. A lot of it doesn't necessarily consistently transfer to success at the NFL level if you haven't really honed your skills, the precision that you need to play within the pocket from. And so that's going to be the question. I do think Sam Darnold would benefit from a year of college. I think he'd be a better football player entering the National Football League if he came back. But there's a very sound argument that can be made to, if you might be the number one pick in the draft, you know, perhaps at least a sure top five pick. I mean, you know, maybe sure top two pick when we really get down to this. It may be him or Rosen. So, you know, to turn down the potential for that and to go back and have another year of college and all the risks associated with that, and who knows how, you know, your life could be changed, your world could be rocked if you do have some kind of career-altering injury coming back next season. I mean, I don't say that in advocating either way necessarily, but just think about the weight of that decision. And I do believe Sam Darnold, in staring the potential for being the number one pick in the NFL draft in the face, he does strike me as the type of guy that would say, you know what? I'm enjoying college, and I want to be the best version of myself when I go pro. I'm willing to go back for another year and just sort of stiff-arm the potential for being the number one pick.
Yeah, and it's going to be very interesting to see who those teams are. I mean, right now it's Cleveland, which would not be a very attractive place, I don't think, from a kid from California. It's San Francisco, who may have their guy in Jimmy Garoppolo, so you think, well, you know, whether or not that's going to, you know, whether or not they're going to be picking a quarterback. And then it's the Giants, and that might be intriguing to them, going from, you know, media market number two to media market number one.
Right. It certainly should be. You know, to me, the Giants as a two-win team right now, I'm saying I kind of think the Jets aren't going to fall off the map, but at four wins, I have a hard time seeing the Cleveland Browns hitting the four-win plateau. You know, the Niners may end up getting another win or two. We'll just see how quickly Jimmy Garoppolo can really sort of ingratiate himself with his teammates and get the system figured out. But, yeah, I mean, it's likely going to be the Cleveland Browns sitting there with that top pick. And if that's the case, you know, I mean, we've seen Cleveland do really goofy things on draft day before. I mean, maybe they don't even still sit there number one. Maybe they work some other trade, acquire five more picks with some team who wants to trade up to the number one overall slot. I mean, who knows? Maybe he actually wouldn't end up sitting there for the Cleveland Browns. Maybe it's someone else with the number one pick, because Cleveland may still end up doing some of these weird Cleveland things.
You never know. All right, before I let you go, as we said, Jim Mora Jr. out. You wonder whether or not that was a move to jump the gun on Chip Kelly before he became a Florida Gator. Is that a good fit for Chip Kelly to return to the Pac-12?
Here's what intrigues me with the fact that UCLA was willing to make that move before the regular season even ended. It's twofold. One, the fact that, yes, there's a week left. They've got a game against Cal this week. So how do you really benefit the team in any way by getting rid of the coach with 1 week left? It's a sort of audition for Jed Fish, who's been in the NFL and the college level, but he's got a week to do something with the team. So this is a legit audition for Jed Fish. But you look at the level of regression. I mean, you know, as you and I have talked about the job security or lack thereof with Jim Moore for a few weeks now, and to me, the biggest question I had about whether or not UCLA would be willing to make the move was, are they going to cut a $12 million check? That's a lot of money, and UCLA is not one of these SEC schools. They've got a bunch of other folks with deep pockets who are willing to spend that money solely on football. That's a big move for the Bruins to be willing to do that, and it does speak to the level of regression that they're likely to have in not only cutting that $12 million check initially, but now you would say that's likely meaning they're going to be willing to be aggressive about spending money for the replacement. Who this next coach for the UCLA Bruins will be, I don't know that that'll be Chip Kelly. I think, you know, again, just going back to the price tag part of it, if nothing else, I think Chip Kelly's going to ask for a lot of money. You know, all the reports we're hearing, regardless of who he's meeting with at UCLA or Florida, you know, he's going to look to be a $9 or $10 million a year coach. Even if that's not the end money he ends up getting, he's going to be in that neighborhood somewhere. He's looking to be in that Nick Saban neighborhood for what he makes annually. If that's the case, I don't know if that's a place UCLA can really go to fiscally just on an annual basis. So to me, I'm a Kevin Sumlin guy. I think that he would be a great fit for a program like UCLA. That's whether he gets fired by Texas A&M and their unrealistic expectations from the fans and administration there, or if he just says, you know what, UCLA, once you go and get me out of this deal, work with my administration, let's do what we got to do to make this happen. And he just preempts perhaps getting fired by Texas A&M a year from now to go to an opportunity with, I think, a fan base that would really be excited about having him and an administration that would have more realistic expectations about where he should be able to take that program.
That's an interesting take. I did not know he was a California guy. He's a Southern Cal guy?
No, Kevin Sumlin. I wasn't saying he's a Southern Cal guy. I was just saying that it's an administration that would
see him. I thought you were saying that Sumlin's from California, that's home for him. I don't know if you were saying that or not. But that's an interesting thought, you know, that he can go to someplace like that but you know, he's had this experience in the state of Texas of being, no matter what the records are, always second banana to Texas, and you wonder about going to LA where you're always battling that with USC, you know what I mean? Now you're at UCLA. Not that you can't get it done there, but you know, you got that same deal as where you always have that feeling that you're a little brother.
It would be. There's no doubt. You would certainly be little brother. That's one thing that, if you look at anything Jim Moore Jr. wasn't able to take advantage of while he was there, is while USC was down, UCLA had an opportunity to try and take some of that mantle in the L.A. market from USC, and just UCLA wasn't able to put any magical season together to really capture the consciousness of the fan base around there. So Kevin Sumlin, even if he doesn't overtake USC, just from a sheer market share, a Q rating kind of standpoint, but he can be in a more realistic environment for what the expectations are for the level of success that he can and should have as a head coach at an institution. I think it would be a great get for UCLA because he's got a winning resume. He's done it everywhere he's been. And for him, he can recruit. He's recruited the Southeast. He's recruited, you know, the Southwest. He can go to the West Coast and I think have that similar sort of cachet with recruits because they've seen what he's been able to do. And there's one of the top quarterbacks in the country who's already committed to the Bruins for next season. And Kevin Sumlin strikes me as the type of guy with the way his offense has operated over the years and the points he's put up at different programs. I think if you keep that number one quarterback in play, Jim Moore's already got a lot of defensive talent in place. It's a spot that I think Kevin Sumlin could win at pretty quickly.
Always a pleasure, Ant. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I'm looking forward to the Bayou Classic as well. It's always great to see you on that, and that's one that you stay and watch the halftime as well, man. Those bands are unbelievable.
That's right, the Human Jukebox. It's one of the most fun atmospheres you will see. And there's folks talking about maybe the New Orleans Superdome, or I guess the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, will end up being sold out. That's what folks are talking about because it's the third time in 4 years that this game is going to determine who who's going to play in the SWAC championship game the following week. With Grambling and Southern both being back to being two of the preeminent programs at the FCS level, the fan base around it has really improved and gotten a hold of it.
Tremendous. All right, man. Appreciate you as always.
Big diggity. See you next week.
All right. Thank you. It's always good to have Big Ant in. All right. Let's get a break. We'll come back, get some news in there, and we'll set you up for a top of the five, beat the big dog, all coming up right after this on 730-1039 AM.